Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation yourself at the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. We lost phone lines yesterday morning. We lost all sorts of internet, Wi-Fi, all sorts of things. We had a good morning nonetheless, but everything's back again, so everything's looking good. So get in touch. Pick up the phone, 0818104106. Text 0868104106. Talking about the lovely weather ahead. I got a lovely... I think it might have been, a text that came in, probably a WhatsApp message with an attachment. It said, "Loving your weather forecasts, Neil. We certainly need it." And I got a lovely note then from Whitechurch Tennis Senior Doubles, because they're having the senior doubles open right across the weekend out in Whitechurch. Good luck with it, because the weather is on your side. They've got over 400 players taking place at the Whitechurch Community Centre. What do you play on? All weather? Don't suppose you play on grass. There's very few grass courts around. I think there's some lovely grass courts down West Cork way. But anyway, have a good one across the weekend. The weather's on your side for Whitechurch. Paper-wise this morning, after 43 years, following the Stardust Inferno, the inquest jury's long-awaited verdict will be delivered at 2 p.m. today. It's the front page of making many of the red tops today. I see it in the Sun. Who'd forget it? 1981, victims of the 1981 Dublin nightclub fire. I remember being on air back in the day, way back in the day when that news was coming in. Awfully, awfully sad. So many lost their lives. 48 victims, and many of the survivors, of course, scarred for life, but 48 young lives. So that inquiry verdict is expected this afternoon, and they are praying for justice after over 43 years. Like, for instance, The Mirror picks up on the story today, saying that it will mark the end of a 43-year wait for those looking for answers since the devastating blaze in the nightclub in Artane on Valentine's Day, Valentine's Night, 1981. And they never came home. A song, actually, that was written by Christy Moore back in the day. There's a court injunction taken out about that song. I don't know if I ever told you that story. It was on a Christy Moore album as well, which I bought. I still have. But when he released the album, there's a song on it called They Never Came Home. There was a line in it about the fire exits being chained. And all of the albums, the vinyl and the cassettes, had to be taken out of all of the record shops all over Ireland. But I digress, maybe. The families of those who died, all those who died were aged between 16 and 27 years old. They have sat now through 122 days of the fresh inquest that came about after a long campaign for justice. Now, the papers this morning talk about the 370 witnesses called to give evidence, including survivors, emergency crews, nightclub workers. It was the most extensive inquest ever held in the country, and some of the key evidence. And you know, wouldn't Charlie Bird love to be around for this now on the day that's in it, because he stood front and centre with the families for all of those years. He covered the story, incidentally, back in 81. But some of the key evidence included how the emergency exits were routinely locked or obstructed. 2,000 carpet tiles were on the walls. I mean, carpet tiles on the walls. This is one of the central reasons, one of the central reasons as to why the fire, the flames, the inferno spread so quickly. But we'll have to see what happens this afternoon, and our thoughts are with the families. They never gave up, in spite of their children never coming home. The Examiner this morning has that burglary with menace and violence. Owen English is covering it. Their Gardaí are hunting two armed men. Apparently, they beat three people very badly during a violent burglary in the Cork City Centre apartment, not too far from the Bridewell Garda station, actually, over on Grenville Place, Millard Street, it's called, by the Mercy. They subjected the occupants, two women and a man. They were all Chinese nationals, aged in their 30s. They subjected them to a violent beating. Then they ransacked the property, and they left, apparently, with a sum of cash during the incident. Now, more than that, I can't tell you, but the Gardaí are taking it obviously very, very serious. I don't know whether it was planned, whether they knew there may have been money. I have no idea whether it was random or whatever, but to burgle somebody is bad enough, the shock and the fright and the menacing behaviour of a burglar, but then to get beaten so badly that you end up in hospital because of it. The world is becoming a very, very, very dangerous place. In other news, the Independents have got a chink of good news. House prices are set to, maybe maybe they've peaked. Maybe they, I know we say that. We say, oh no, it can't go any higher, and then it goes higher. But now they're speculating that maybe house prices have peaked and that the rates have peaked and that maybe there's a possibility of an interest rate, you know, decrease, and that maybe that would be a good reason for people to go back and look at buying houses again. Because apparently, this morning, the Independent is saying the possibility that interest rates have peaked and will fall is one of the reasons why the pace of property prices is rising again. So on the one hand, it gives people an opportunity to buy if interest rates drop. But on the other hand, of course, the other sharp edge of this sword is that it also gives builders and developers and those involved in selling another reason to put prices up. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. The Echo's front page today is very, very sad. Almost half of the people who died by suicide in Cork had alcohol in their system at the time. It's a new report that's out that's linking suicide and alcohol. And it found also that young people who take their own lives, or who did take their own lives, were more likely to have alcohol in their system at the time. And people who took their own lives in Cork had alcohol in their system. They break it down then in age demographics, 25 to 54, and they look at males and they look at females. They spoke with one anonymous person who is struggling and was struggling with you know, just wanting to go on. And that person said, in the end, my breaking point was something very small, but I had been drinking for days and was beginning to sober up, and everything I had to do that day just seemed absolutely impossible. At the time, I didn't see any other way out. I knew I couldn't continue drinking the way I was going, and I'd lose my job, my home, and all of my family and friends. And of course, the alcohol on board and the coming down from, you know, excessive drinking alcohol makes you even more down, makes you even more depressed, you know, makes you more gloomy. You see the negative in everything. That's a front page on the front and inside pages of the Examiner. For those then who do like a tipple and drink responsibly, you're going to find that everything across the summer is going to be dearer, particularly if you look forward to a pint bottle of Bulmers with a big pint of ice. It's going to cost you 20 euro, 20 cent more. Hear me, with my 20 euro, wouldn't put anything past him. But anyway, 20 cent more by the end of the month, apparently. And you know, when you talk about the 6 cent by Diageo for the Guinness and the Carlsberg and the Smithix and all this stuff, most publicans are going to put significantly more than 6 cent, or have put more on than 6 cent. Some are putting it up by 10 cent. Some pubs have put up their draft beers by 30 cent, which means now you're going to find it much more regular now to find, you know, pints of stout and lager at least 6 euro in many bars, where it was nowhere near 6 euro before. And then I see a story in the Irish Times on the front page this morning. How are we going to put a cap on the amount of people who are coming into the country illegally or without documentation? Because it's just not acceptable in any kind of normal. And I understand that many of them would say that they're fleeing this and they're fleeing that, and war and persecution. I understand. But if they're arriving at the other end before they get on the plane with paperwork that allows them to get on the plane, how come they ain't got it when they arrive here in Ireland? Well, airlines now must step up to the plate more, because there's going to be new laws or rules. I don't know how enforceable they'd be, but airlines could face higher fines and be subjected to tough legal obligations to check documents of passengers flying into Ireland under the proposed new immigration reform. So let's say that they do all of the checking and everything's right, and they're able to tell whether it's fake or whether they're real documents. That changes nothing if they're tearing the documentation up on the plane or presenting at Irish passport control with absolutely nothing on them. Talking about having nothing on, well, it's not necessarily the clothes on their back, but their house is gone. This is a gangster and his wife have been ordered out of their luxury home. I love when the Criminal Assets Bureau win battles, when they take on the big criminals and they win. And this couple, himself and the wife, this would be David and Charlene Waldron, must now hand over a property portfolio and assets worth over 3 million euro, including their palatial Irish mansion, because he was a major player in the distribution and sale of drugs, and his wife knew full well how the house was paid for. So Cab were successful in court in that regard. And that's, you know, another box ticked, but I suppose it's a bit like Groundhog Day, really, isn't it? Or, you know, whack-a-mole, I suppose is what I should say. You look out, you sort out one and two or three more pop up. Then of course, we've, you know, we often talk in this program about many of the empty properties over businesses in the city, and nothing gets done with them, and we're fed this line about, oh, it's all to do with emergency exits and nothing can be done about it. Of course something can be done about it. If there was a will, there would be a way. But Simon this morning have a new report out that makes the Mail, and they talk about the thousands of empty above the shop units which could be fixed quite quickly and with reasonably little money to get them right. It's not as if it's a complete new build, and there are 60,000 people waiting on a social housing list alone, and many other people who want to buy their own home, of course, are still at home because they just can't afford it and there just aren't enough to go around. But yet the nonsense continues. Here we have another example now of what would be a lovely creche below in, did I read Carrigaline, a preschool that's been refused planning yet again for the second time. 400 parents have expressed an interest in securing places for their children at the facility, but yet, for the second time, those behind it, the childcare company behind it, have been knocked back yet again by planning. I don't know, man. Do people not understand the sense of urgency in these kind of things? And then, of course, the butchery then of the National Transport Authority and these bus corridors. And we know the impact it's having on many people's homes and gardens and roads and where they live and all this crazy one-way system. You won't be able to get home half the time now. But you know what they want to do now? They want to chop down the finger post in Dublin, which, in Douglas, which has been around, I would say, for maybe 150 years. Dominic Daly would know more about the finger post than me. I might give him a ring because it's been moved a few times around the Douglas area. It's right in the middle of a roundabout. Now, it wasn't always there. It was kind of closer at one stage for many years, next to what would be, it used to be next to what would now be Paddy Hayes's doctor's surgery and the vet. It was on the side of the road, but it's been moved three or four times. And the one that's there now isn't the original. It's been changed a few times. I think it was stolen once years ago, cut down and stolen, but it's an iconic piece of Douglas. So they're saying, we want to get rid of that now, and instead we're going to put in traffic light systems instead. Really? You know, does anybody in here think that this just should not be allowed? And that somebody should say, stop. It's important. I mean, I think we could probably come up with other aspects of our city that are iconic and nostalgic and important and historic. That would be one of them. And then there's a story regarding structures then making the sun. It's a ginormous memorial. You wouldn't call it a gravestone or a headstone. It's huge. Apparently, it's 4.5 meters. It's four times the maximum height permitted for a grave, and it's up in County Donegal. So it's ginormous, and officials are facing complaints over a mega gravestone that is now sparking walkouts by parishioners saying that there's nothing they can do about it. I think at this stage, Donegal County Council are just shrugging their shoulders and say, well, what do you want us to do about it? It's a sad story. It's Charlie McDonough's giant tomb, and it's got the county flags on it. These are all, incidentally, you know, not actual. Well, there are the flags are real flags, but everything else is in stone. It's huge. It wouldn't be my cup of tea, but then certain sections of the community like to do things like that. They like to do things quite big. So it features carvings of the 21-year-old's car, his phone, his sunglasses, his Rolex watch, his cologne, and his favourite tipple. So it's quite big. Many find it garish and ugly. It's a mark of respect to the young lad that died. A massive fundraiser by friends and families gathered 150 grand to go to the purchase of the colossal headstone. Is that what it would cost? But yet, isn't it funny that nobody noticed when it was going up and called a halt to it? And there it is, four times bigger than the legal permitted one. I mean, you can go around to many Cork graveyards now, you will see particular memorials and headstones that just stand out. Certain sects of the community like them big and like them kind of ostentatious. For others then, they don't quite fit in, do you know what I mean? And this is then, this has got to be, for me, the third or fourth story of people wheeling dead bodies into either post offices or banks. It's a South American story where a woman pushed her dead uncle into a bank. The dead uncle is pale and dead inside in a wheelchair, and she's trying to get a €3,000 loan. Her name is Erica de Souza Nunes, and she's this is all video because obviously it was captured on the bank's CCTV cameras, but you can see her trying to hold up the head of the corpse and telling the corpse, you have to sign it. I can't sign it for you. When she's met by silence by the suspicious staff member, tells her, I don't think he looks well. He looks very pale. To which Nones responds, he's like that. She then tells the dead man, if you're not well, I can take you to the hospital. Do you want to go back to hospital again, or can you sign it? She's telling him then to grip the pen hard. She puts the pen between his dead fingers, encouraging him to sign the papers for the loan. The dead man's head is swaying back and forth and bobbing and dropping, and she keeps on grabbing his neck and holding his neck up with her left hand and holding his hand and the pen with the other hand. Sign here, she says. Stop giving me a headache. It's just mental. You need to sign it. I can't sign it for you. Pushing the pen in his limp hand. Obviously, how did this play out? Well, the concerned bank staff knew that this was... There's actually photographs and everything making the papers today. But anyway, they alerted the police. Nunes was arrested, the corpse was taken to a morgue, and the dead man's been buried. He was Paulo Braga, who died at the age of 68. And you just couldn't make this kind of stuff up. Another thing that, you know, you talk about stories and storylines. If you've seen Ken, I think you'll agree, it is some of the finest television that was ever made. Really and truly, I think it is just, it's as good, maybe not quite as good as Love Hate, but not far behind it. And there is huge demand now for the first two series of Kin all over the world. So there's a bidding war for it. Amazon are bidding for the two series. Prime are bidding for the, Amazon Prime, I should say. The BBC are expected to be on the bidders. And Netflix. Now, Netflix was bought by Kin, the rights to it, so they're going to make a third season. But millions of viewers love it. So I'm just saying this is still in the news because there's a brewing war now. There's a war now, a bidding war brewing now as to who'll get the rights to, you know, the two series already. Netflix are kind of indicating they want to make a third series, which will be fantastic because that's one that could run and run. The feuds between all of the different drug cartels in Dublin, and it deals with one particular family, the Kinsella family. Oh, there's another one then, just maybe finally for now, and I'll come back to other stuff a little later on. You know, you may not know it, but, you know, ice cream trucks and people who have ice cream vans, there are many of them, and they're very protective of their turf and their route, and rightly so, because you don't want two or three ice cream vans coming into an estate or into an area, one after the other. It's best to try and split up the territory, if you like. Doesn't always work out. And I know on Lee side in the past, there's been some rows between different companies and individuals who own ice cream trucks. But the latest one is above in County Donegal on a place called Rathmullen Beach. Now, this has gone before the courts, and the guards really are fed up with it because they were saying in court that the row between the two different ice cream van owners is just taking up an awful lot of guard at a time. So the judge now said yesterday that he was willing to put a freeze on any court decision between the two rival ice cream salesmen because apparently peace may have melted. Peace deal may have melted the feud, I suppose. The pair are accused of incidents which would be a series of incidents between the two where they were charged with breaches of the peace because they set up on the same beach selling ice cream next to each other at the same scenic spot. And you can't be doing that. It's exclusively one or the other. And I suppose it's a case of who was there first, as the fella says. It's even nice to be talking about ice cream vans, though, isn't it? Because it kind of heralds the hopefully soon arrival of great weather and a great summer for 2024. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, quite an amount of texts and comments built up from yesterday because I wouldn't have seen them because while you guys were texting for a couple of hours yesterday, I wasn't getting any of them because everything was down. So I'll be picking up on that. But one thing that I noticed actually was a comment that I made a couple of days ago about the tradition of runaway money where back in the day, mams would be putting a few bob away every week just in case, right? And I was very serious and I was wondering, did it still happen? And then I got texts from other people saying, my nan always told me to have runaway money. She told me to always put a little bit away just in case. Now, the just in case, you know, that could be a lot of different reasons, as in for a rainy day, or you might need the money, or put it towards a holiday, or, you know, it might have been books for the kids or schools or school stuff or a pair of shoes. But it also could be runaway money, as in to get out of a relationship that was either dangerous or failed or toxic, or whether there was no love left, or any of those reasons. And she said, I'm in my 40s now, and my nan is gone a few years, but I still do this every week. You never know when you might need the extra few pound. So it could be for lots of different reasons, but historically, traditionally, it was called runaway money. Paul says it must be a woman thing. I'm so poor I couldn't even walk away. But Pamela says, yes, to this day, I still have my runaway money. My hubby found it once in a tissue box and he thought I'd won the lotto. Or maybe he thought he'd won the lotto, I suppose, Pam. My mom always had her runaway money and so did my nan. My mom always warned me to have mine and never, ever, ever tell your husband. Patricia says, I have never, ever been dependent on anyone for money, not even my hubby. I started working at 18. I had a flat, I had a car, paid my own bills. Yeah, we shared expenses after marriage, but I always had my own account. We prorated everything fairly, as in we divided everything fairly, because he earned more than me. I have known too many women stuck in bad relationships because they have no way out. I would never give that kind of control to anyone. There were times I barely made it month to month, but I never borrowed or owed anything to anyone. And I relish that freedom today. So Patricia also saying it's important not only to maybe, you know, have some runaway money, inverted commas, but also your own independent bank account. Kerry says, my mother always used to say, keep a few bob back in the purse. You never know when you might need it. Hannah says, I call it runaway money too. It's very important for every woman to have their own sneaky few bob. So it is still, and that's just one page of many pages of text. And Patricia says, I heard this years ago from her friend, Anari, to be exact. She had hers and is still with her fella. I never listened. I had none and I ran away with nothing. I should have listened because when I had to leave, I had nothing to show for it. Pauline says, a good woman should always have rainy day money. And Geraldine says, I always have running away money. The problem is I usually spend it every year on a holiday with my girlfriends. anyway, others are texting on that as well. So keep those coming. So it seems as if it wasn't a forgotten about tradition. It's still there. People still do it. Not necessarily just to run away. It's you know, Revolut is very good now. You can set up a weekly amount on Revolut, even if it's 10 or 20 or 30 euro. And you'd be surprised how much it gathered if you can afford to do it. And then on some revenue, you can set up a thing called a vault, which will kind of round up your change. You can tell it to, you know, round up your change by one or by two or by three. So a typical example of that would be if you bought something for €2.80, you'd pay the €2.80 and Revolut would snaffle 20 cent and put it into a vault for you. You could also tell Revolut to take twice as much or three times, if you were flush, that is. And if you do it, you probably agree with me. It really does grow. Anyway, enough of me. Let's get to the phone lines on that and other matters as well. Noreen, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I know. I'm going to talk to you about people, the ignorance of people in disabled parking in a second. But can I ask you, did you ever hear about runaway money?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there isn't a woman born really that hasn't heard of that. You know, it's just one of those things. Going back to my own mother, she always kept money in an envelope in her underwear drawer. Always.
And did she ever say why?
Running away. It just, do you know now, Neil, if the washing machine broke down, if you had an appliance that wasn't working or there was a plumbing problem, she always kept this little brown envelope in her underwear drawer, and at least then, if anything happened, she had money to turn to pay.
But did she call it her runaway fund, her runaway money?
Not really, no, she never called it that, actually, just Her secret stash, she used to call it.
A secret stash is a good idea as well. But, you know, this actually was something that was kind of drilled in generation by generation by generation, where mothers told daughters and daughters told their daughters.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I just think it's just so difficult to save, Neil, because everything's so expensive now. I think it's quite hard for anyone, male or female, to put away a few bob, you know? But just as things are getting more and more inflation, you try and put away what you can,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's important. But you were saying, in fairness in your text, that it is very important to have your own independence, even if you're in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Without question,
let's get some more calls and texts on that. But topic we were talking about earlier on this morning, it was mentioned by Kieran Kramer. He's in a wheelchair. He got sepsis from a horsefly bite. And he was saying he was able-bodied until then, But he couldn't believe, the minute he started having to live in a wheelchair, he says, he noticed how ignorant, these are my words, not him, and rude people are when it comes to parking.
Absolutely, I completely agree with him. It's phenomenal. It's actually dumbfounding the amount of people that park in disabled parking bays and have no badge. Absolutely none. But what gets me more is the fact that there don't seem to be anyone monitoring this situation. You know, like I shop every week in Aldi in Blackrock where I live and over in Tesco. And every Thursday, later on, today I'll go over and guarantee there'll be people parked, cars parked in disabled bays with no badge.
Okay.
Now, I've gone into Tesco on numerous occasions and they're not responsible. Aldi 2 weeks ago, again, people parking in the bays, went into Aldi, spoke to one of the guys. I said, can you tell me who's responsible for monitoring your car park? Oh, it's not us, it's the landlord. I said, right. I said, and who's the landlord? Sorry, we can't give out that information.
Right, right. So you find it...
Where do we go from there?
Okay, so you find it in Mahon Point on the upper floor. Yes. That's where you can walk through into Tesco, isn't it?
That's right, okay. Yeah, that's the one.
You use that's Aldi as well?
Aldi is unreal.
Where's Aldi, that? Which one?
The one in Blackrock as well, down by Blackrock Hall.
Okay.
By the pharmacy there. And outside the pharmacy is brutal. I think there's 3 disabled parking bays there and nobody, I mean, everyone parks in those bays. Everyone. And then, because you've got the HSE centre as well, for the, you know, lots going on
that's
there.
That's right.
Nurse.
That's right. Yeah, and lots of different children, doctors in there. So there must be 40 or 50 doctors in there, yeah.
Yeah, and they're, you know, but they just don't care. And when you say anything, they just tell you, you know, the proverbial F off.
And do they tell you to F-U-C-K off?
Oh, God, yeah. Mind your own business. That's usually the response you get.
They're very ignorant, aren't
but
they?
I just find it extraordinary that nobody, that the, especially, like we'll say, Tesco and Aldi, the big, big stores, that, I mean, we go, obviously, they, you know, we park in their car park, you'd imagine, to go in, but yet they're not responsible for what happens out there.
Do you ever see, so you actually see them getting out of their cars, able-bodied people, no blue badge?
Absolutely.
And who is it typically? Is it men are doing it? Is it women? Is it people with children? Somebody with a pram?
I've never seen anyone with children, to be fair. Never seen a woman or man with children. It's usually men and women. I can't say what age group, you know, it varies. But, yeah. I was raised never. I mean, that's something you just don't do. It's like you going into a graveyard and damaging, you know, the graves. I was raised, you just don't do
okay.
those things.
Okay, is it because it's raining and they don't want to get wet?
Not
is it because they're lazy? What?
I have no idea. I have no idea. They just couldn't give a monkeys, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, they just don't care, Neil. They just don't care.
What about inside in town, then?
I haven't been to town, so I can't comment.
Why don't you go... Do you not do any shopping in the city, no?
No, no.
Is there a reason for that?
Not for a long time, no. Not really. I suppose I'm lazy. I just go over to where I live and out to Wilton and whatever. I've been to town, but not... I wouldn't take my car. I'd get the bus, you know?
Okay. And you clearly have some form of mobility issues then, yeah?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Nothing major now, to be fair. I mean, I don't have a wheelchair, but I have to use a crutch on occasions, yeah.
Oh,
and
well,
I can't walk for long distance.
Well, that's the very reason. That's the very reason
why
ignorant, rude, stupid people shouldn't be parking in disability spots.
But they do, Neil. They do it every single day of the week. And it doesn't seem to faze them at all. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah. People shouldn't have to be told and, you know, car parks shouldn't have to be monitored. It should be just basic cop on and basic manners, you know?
Basic manners, but that's unfortunately that's lacking in today's society. I'm afraid.
Somebody with a disability that wants to do a bit of shopping needs that space. Firstly, because they mightn't be able to walk far. Secondly, they might be in a wheelchair or they have a crutch or a stick or a cane. Thirdly, it means it's very hard for them to carry back bags or push trolleys long distances.
Yeah.
I understand
absolutely.
All right, okay, good stuff.
All right,
thanks, Noreen. Look after yourself. Let me know how you get on this afternoon, will you?
I will, yeah. Send you a text.
All right, girl. Take care for now. Text 0868-104-106. Everybody else.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Spoke yesterday on the air with Laura, who eventually got out of a very coercive and toxic relationship, although, because they have children together, it's far from over. It was a very open conversation. She was very honest about it, and it was brutal listening to what she's been through. My friend is going through this domestic abuse at the moment. It's nearly exactly the same as Laura's story, except her children are older and are hugely influenced by their father. The social worker involved says it's parental alienation and that bullies are hard to deal with, as they are usually, amongst other things, bullies, dishonest, spiteful, and jealous. Another one. This is a wonderful book which has helped many people. I mentioned this yesterday and somebody else is texting. The book is by Lundy Bancroft. It's called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry and Controlling Men. I don't know if anybody ever wrote a book by Why Does She Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry and Controlling Women. But I think you know what I mean, in the sense that, you know, it happens to both men and women. Does this guy have an opinion on his own story? Where is your balance? Maybe he was a bad guy, but you're only listening to one side of the story. I was in an emotionally abusive relationship for 17 years. He was an addict and he was an alcoholic. He was jealous of our son, would you believe it? I'm out of it a few years now, and it's only the last few weeks I'm getting myself back together. It was toxic. I can see everything clearly now that I'm out of it. Everything was about him. Everything. It was all false hope. My body was telling me to get away, and I ended up with severe anxiety from it all. Laura is describing everything that I feel. They all do the same things and act the same way. It was all me, 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 and everything was about him. He was constantly looking for pity. I got the guards to get him out of my house. The jealousy went out of control when I got my own home. He was just a man-child. My son had more emotional intelligence than him. I also found out that he was using prostitutes and escorts and sex apps, all while accusing me of cheating if I even said hello to somebody. Horrible person. My son gave me the strength to get rid of him because he started doing the same thing to my son. I understand everything that Laura is saying. It is frightening. And there are many more of those. Let me give one or two more. Is there a reason the woman on now has been given airtime? There are two sides to every story. Johnny Depp is proof of that. Women whine as if butter wouldn't melt. Being manipulative, mouthy, and aggressive are not the persevere of men. Disgrace. There's no husband to respond. It can always be just lies, says Liz. Well, I don't think that's very kind. With regards to what Laura had to say yesterday, I'm more than willing to talk to anybody, either male or female, of what they go through in domestic situations. Oh my God, this woman is describing everything that I went through. She's giving me strength. I felt like I was going mad, like she did. To be caught in a situation like this is absolutely horrendous. And one final one, listening to that poor girl on the radio, sadly, it's only the tip of the iceberg. I've dated quite a few women in the past number of years, and I would say 75% would have experienced this type of behavior. I've had this with my daughter and had to step in to protect her in her relationship. I've worked on doors, as in, I guess, security staff, and I've witnessed young guys and the horrible way they treat their girlfriends. I've even had to step in on occasions. It's all too common, sadly. It's a failure in our society and our judicial system. Don't give up my details. Thank you for those texts. I'll come back to more of them throughout the course of the morning. Text 0868-104-106. But can I just stop and mention, very sadly this morning, I heard of the death of Alf McCarthy. Wonderful, wonderful broadcaster and a great guy and a super Cork man. Anytime I would, he was 63 years old, 73 years old. I only saw a photograph from the papers last week. I think they were doing a Burt Bacharach tribute at the moment in the Everyman. He looked fit. He looked healthy. And then this morning we hear that he died unexpectedly at Cork University Hospital last night at the age of 73. He was on air for decades and decades. He was a fine broadcaster. He really and truly was. Anytime you'd meet Alf, he would always have a kind word. He was always in great form. He always had a smile. He was... He always said something nice about you. He always very complimentary, and he just kind of loved people, and he loved communicating with people, and he loved broadcasting. I remember years and years and years ago, going way back, and I think it was, he might have even have just started with Cork Local Radio at the time. He was the manager of Pizzaland on Patrick Street, one of the very first, I think maybe even the first pizza shop that opened in Cork and then went on to have a great career in radio from 1979. A colleague of his joins me by phone this morning, the one and only Marty Morrissey. Marty, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Indeed, your description of Alf McCarthy is spot on. Absolutely spot on.
You must have been shocked when you heard the news, because he's working away. He's doing the everyman gig and living life to the full down Ross Carberry.
I actually couldn't believe it, because we have remained in contact and remained friends. And I met him at the Cork Person of the Year recently, and he was there, and we had a chat. Now, I thought he did look a little bit pale, but I didn't know of anything that was, that he was ill or anything like that. But Alf has been a great friend to all of us, as you said, and he always had something positive. He did live by the mantra, if you have nothing good to say, don't say anything at all, because it was always that positivity. And I arrived in 1990 into Cork Local Radio as trying to make it in the world of broadcasting, and the welcome he gave me, I'll never forget it. Welcome, bye. Welcome. And you're one of us now, And Cork Local Radio, when you think of Cork About, you think of, Cameron Jones, Donna O'Sullivan, Barry Meskell, and then the producers, Aidan Stanley and Pat O'Donovan. They were a small team, but they were on air. People might know before local radio started, like your own station and others. It was on from 11 to 1, and then they break for the news at 1, and then come back on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Alf would do 11 to 1. He was kind of like the Gay Byrne of Cork.
He was.
Neil Prendeville.
He had a great lilt about him. He had a very casual conversational style about him. It was wonderful.
Correct, yeah. And lovely. And he would give you, as a radio producer, he was top notch. And I learned an awful lot from my days in Cork, and indeed from Alf in particular. And sometimes we forget, he used to present live at 3 in the afternoon at time. He did a stint there, and he also was on a late date. I think that was towards the latter stages of his career. And I remember he getting a call up to present Saturday Sports on the National. And we were all delighted for him, because I suppose that was being part of that ship, we all kind of wanted to do something in the National, and Alf kind of was there. So he had a national presence, but obviously his legendary status was in Cork, and was much loved, and way ahead when local radio and broadcasting, as you said in your introduction, broadcasting was in his DNA, and he was a bit of an actor. What I loved about Alf, Neil, was that when I'd meet him and when he'd ring me, I'd always have a laugh, and I always wanted to be in his company, because you'd have 20 minutes of laughter. Do you remember this? And he tells some story and about somebody or other, and you just laugh. And it was always good natured. It was never in any way negative, but it was just having a laugh.
Yeah, I read a lovely one of those lovely interviews that they do with different people in the Examiner. They're kind of a question and answer thing, and he said, after I got married, I couldn't even go shopping until the RTE check landed in the bank. He said, for years I worked 7 days a week managing Pizzaland, one of Ireland's first pizza restaurants. I was doing discos at the weekend. I often would remember the ATM machine saying, insufficient funds in your account.
I know we shouldn't laugh, but I mean, the way he would describe that, you'd have to laugh.
They asked him, what was your worst job ever? And he said, selling encyclopedias in Alberta. The snow hit the day we landed on the ground, and I was wearing my cotton pants from Cork and was frozen going around knocking at doors. Alf McCarthy selling encyclopedias in Alberta, Canada, in the middle of winter.
And that beautiful Cork lilt, I'm sure, went down well in Alberta, Canada.
Surely so, a load of them.
Absolutely. We will all miss him, because he was a forerunner for all of us. He was an inspiration for any of us who love broadcasting. And I know he was much loved by the people of Cork, because he had that DNA. He was Cork. He was the real broadcaster. And I must say, I miss his phone calls and texts and photographs out of the blue that I get maybe at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to miss all that. I pass on my deepest sympathies, not just to his family, because do you know what, Neil, a bit like yourself, the people of Cork, they loved him. And when they'll hear this news, they'll all be heartbroken.
He was a fine actor, wasn't he, as well as everything else?
Great actor. Great actor. And loved acting. My word. So when, that was part of his character. I mean, when you meet him, he would act out the role. And you could visualize, as well as hear, the story being told, you know? And he loved being part of the various dramas that he was involved in, because he had that production brain, and he could see things, and he could do simple things that would make whatever the script was coming off the pages come to life just by a little motion that he would come up with. So, I mean, I went to see him several times performing, and he was just superb in everything he did. I think we all loved Al.
Yeah, no, I got a text from John Creedon this morning, actually. He was devastated. Mm. He said, you know, yeah, it's just out of the blue. He said, may he rest in peace. No one was expecting it. I mean, like 10 days ago, and even up to maybe less than that, he was on the stage of the Everyman. I think they were doing the celebration of Burt Bacharach. So, I mean, you know, it must have been something.
Yeah, I mean,
really,
it is a song. I mean, when I heard it last night, I couldn't believe it. Because, as I said, I only saw him at the Cork Crowd. But he sent me a text about last week, but never... I'm just heartbroken that Alfred is no longer with us. But you know what, Neil? I mean, everybody will appreciate your tribute to him this morning, and we will never forget Alf McCarthy was Clark.
Well, very Clark. Kind words. Thanks for that, Marty, as always. Thanks for taking the time this morning. I know you stepped out to chat to me. I appreciate it. He was an award-winning actor, as Marty was saying. He appeared in The Dresser. He appeared in A Streetcar Named Desire. He loved the boards. And The Woman in Black, he had a great performance in the production of The Odd Couple in the Everyman Theatre in Cork. And he also I hate mentioning this because I don't necessarily want people to go and watch my performance, but he was also a cracking actor in the movie Strength and Honour. And there's a lovely tribute this morning up on the RTE website from the great Jenny O'Sullivan, a former colleague of Alf McCarthy, died after a short illness. May he rest in peace. It's very sad news.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I was talking recently about, are we dating the same guy? We spoke a lot about relationships over the last couple of days, particularly yesterday when relationships go very, very wrong. And I was talking about it through the prism of two or three different men who had been the subject of, are we dating the same guy, with very negative impacts on their mental health. But I did get an email in from somebody who just wanted maybe to clarify a couple of points with regards to this Facebook group called Are We Dating the Same Guy? I recently joined the group, and I wish I had joined a long time ago. It might have saved a lot of pain that was inflicted on me. The person I met on a dating site is now serving time for abuse of his ex-wife and children. He wasn't very kind to me either, and I'm sure many others. Now, can I just say that an individual like that would be flagged on the Are We Dating the Same Guy Facebook page? Anyway, emailer says, the main reason I wanted to talk about the group is that there are many guys posted in the group that have so much positive feedback about. Lots of women say kind things about guys that they've dated. It's not necessarily a negative group per se. It's a safe space. The administrator will not post without proof that there's been inappropriate advances made, or there may have been previous criminal records or sexual or violent convictions. If there's no proof, the admin will delete the post. Now, there are some lovely posts about genuine people and high praise for nice guys, and there are some gorgeous posts about kind men. And girls have said to each other, I hope you have a shot because he's a gent, etc., etc. This is just my own experience. That's lovely and glad to have a bit of balance here. The problem really is that by the time the admin has seen the post, everybody else will have seen it, and the unkind or the wrong or the cruel or the vindictive or the false things that have been said about the guy will have been read. Okay, they will then subsequently have been taken down by the admin, but isn't it a bit too late by then? Anyway, text 0868 104 106. We'll pick it up after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And we also have some more Live at the Marquee tickets to give away today, just like yesterday. In fact, I didn't even manage to give away the Damien Dempsey tickets yesterday because the phone lines were down. So today, it's a chance to win not just Damien Dempsey tickets for Live at the Marquee, but also for Van Morrison, who plays the Marquee Friday, the 31st of May. So, for both sets of those tickets, the Damien Dempsey and the Van Morrison, you're listening out for a Van Morrison song sometime between now and midday today. And tickets for the Van Morrison gig and all of the other gigs are available at ticketmaster.ee. And we're looking forward, of course, to Live at the Marquee on Leaside. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106 for all other business. A lot of texts on our topic where we spoke with Laura yesterday. Quite an amount of them with regards to the abuse that she was going through. And I understand also many people have been texting about the amount of men who are actually caught in relationships like that. I'm happy to read those out or talk to any individuals if they'd like to share their own story. But thank you to that woman on air. I have a very similar situation and I felt exactly the same way. I'm sitting in the car listening to her story in tears. Thank you to that brave woman. She's doing a great job, not just for herself, but also her children. Can you tell the last caller on the air to Google covert narcissism? I was in a relationship with a covert narcissist. It might help her understand what they are dealing with. Actually, I'm seeing that text for the first time, so I'd like to Google that also. She's an inspirational lady, is Laura. Great listening to her. I could have written what she was saying myself, but from an Irish man's perspective. Yes, it never is going to go away. I can't come on as I'm in court for another safety order soon. It's never ending. I hope she'll be okay, but fair play to her for coming forward and talking. Big hugs. I have had those thoughts and feel every bit like she did. You're smiling on the outside, but you're dying on the inside. And that's through the perspective of a man. The family court system is appalling with the fact that it takes place in a court setting with people in there ahead of you and behind you, facing criminal charges for stealing and for violence. It's all dealt with in the same court. Family mediation would be a much better solution, but only if both parties are willing, which in my case was not to be, unfortunately. There's also an app that now can be used so each parent can make comments, specify date commitments, and it avoids the need for texting or phoning, where it could facilitate more abuse. I didn't know about that, a specific app then that can organize visitation, you know, dates, maybe commitments or appointments that children might have, etc., etc. Listening to that lovely person, Laura, my ex has control issues. Definitely not to the extent of her ex, but it is still there. His mother is his enabler and won't face up to his erratic behavior and do anything about it. The men texting in are just proving a point. Statistically, Neil, men experience domestic violence a lot less than women. Yes, but it does. But it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And I have found over the years that women are much more willing to come forward and to tell and to share their stories. Men are slower. They're more reticent. They may feel that it's a weakness to talk. Please tell Laura that she should be so proud of herself for highlighting the fact that coercive control never ends as long as access is allowed. The courts do not do any favors to the children by allowing access to these fathers. If he has been controlling towards their mother, he'll only want to continue controlling her and is only using the children to do so. This is not love, and the children deserve love. It's so frustrating that our legal system doesn't recognize this fact. I'm sorry that she had to hear negative comments from people who haven't a clue and will never understand until it touches their own life and takes over. But I live with it every day with my own daughter. Can't come on air as she wouldn't like it, and it would only upset her, but I would say to Laura and all others, stay strong and hope that karma kicks in. What about women, Neil, who deny the father's right to see their children, says John. Time and time again, John, that happens. I'm aware of it. I share those stories and those emails and those calls as often as I can, where women, and I'm answering your question directly, weaponize and use the children as weapons against the children's father's rights and his love of his kids. And that is just awful behaviour. It's disgusting behaviour. It's shameful. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Remember there recently, there was a court case. I was talking about it on the air at the time, about a fortnight ago, where a wife and a mother was caught by the nanny cams in the home, and it had proved years and years of verbal and physical abuse against her husband, and ultimately that video footage that was captured on the nanny cam, you know, they put these cameras into different rooms in the house and bedrooms of the child just to keep an eye on the children if they've got babysitters, whatever. That was very, very important evidence in a court case. Do you remember that a few weeks ago? And also, thank you to Chris. I was talking about the 48 children that never came home in 1981, and the results of that inquiry and inquest will be heard this afternoon when a verdict is given. An awful lot was learned from the Stardust fire in 1981. Chris says, Coco's was the first nightclub to open in Ireland after the Stardust fire. The fire officer, before he would clear the opening of Coco's, put an extra £100,000 onto the opening cost for fire doors and fire corridors and fire traps and alarms that were so sensitive that the fog machine would set them off. So there was a lot learned from the awful tragedy of the Stardust to make, I suppose, public buildings in general. But in this case, Coco's nightclub, a safer place for patrons. Text 0868 104 106. I'll tell you one button that pushes everybody, or one topic that pushes everybody's button. It's behaviour on the roads, it's driving, it's motorists, it's the stupidity of people, and it's also parking and issues around parking. So I'll come back to an awful lot of texts with regards to roads and parking. In fact, there was one particular video that we shared there in the last night or two, which was a BMW overtaking and nearly causing a multiple car collision in the Jack Lynch Tunnel. Shane says it's a BMW driver. They believe they're allowed to do that. But it was captured on dash cam. You can see the BMW driver pulling into the left lane and then slipping back into the right lane. Tiny little gap to get into to overtake a car that was driving in the right-hand lane. If they were a few seconds slower, they would have clipped the front of the car, caused a major accident, and many people would have been injured, perhaps even killed. The stupidity of drivers, in this case, a BMW driver. But back to the phone lines anyway. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How
okay,
are we doing,
and thank you. I love the evidence when we've got calls. You sent me a photograph as well, so describe everything you've got
yes.
for me.
So basically, the blue cab that is they are parked in the disabled way is my own one.
Yeah.
The car behind it is another vehicle. I don't know how this person managed to park in between myself, and there's another car right behind that, in between the two disabled bays. Like, there's one disabled bay, then another disabled bay, but this person managed to fit in between the two of them.
There's two disabled spots, and in between them,
yeah,
there's a kind of an Xbox where both disabled blue badge cars must stay out of, yeah? They
yes.
have to stay out of those
yes. and for
wheelchairs.
And for to give the extra room for, say, a wheelchair bus or a wheelchair to be put into a boot manually.
Absolutely. So a small
and
car managed to fit into that gap.
It wasn't a. It's not a small car. That's like a 7-seater car, nearly.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, actually, it is. Oh, thank you. They're just making it. The picture I have is very small. It is. It's a 2-door,
yeah.
7-seater. How in the name of God did they
yeah.
get in there?
I've no idea. But anyway, so when like myself and the girlfriend said, I packed up and we went about or do our daily business, whatever we were going doing in town that morning, and we came back. And all of a sudden, there was a vehicle parked in between the two of them, mine and another one. And I was like, Jesus Christ, how in the hell did this person manage to park in between it? And no idea, so I rang the...
So you, because you needed to put Sarah's wheelchair into the boot.
Into my boot of my car.
No, not a hope. Not a hope.
And not a hope. So I was there, and so what I did is I have the Cork City Park Enforcement Officer's number. Because one of our cousins works as a traffic warden, so we rang that number, and they had said, oh yeah, we'll send someone there. And lo and behold, just across the road, down one of the side streets, there was a traffic warden. So he came over, he looked at the vehicle, saw me with the chair standing outside of the car, gave you one a fine, looked at our discs and stuff, and noticed that one of them was out, and also gave another fine.
What discs were out? Was it tax, NCT?
It was either the road, I'm pretty sure it was the road tax was out as well, like,
yeah.
because the total combined of the two fines was €210.
What? How does it get up to that much
yeah.
money?
Well, there's an automatic of €130 fine now for parking in disabled bay.
Good.
Even if it's on the access space.
Good.
But then the fact that they had no valid tax or whatever, there's apparently an €80 fine straight away on top of that too.
Okay, 210, good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was waiting around, and actually this person rocked up. It was a female and a young female with her, and she saw a ticket on the windscreen and picked it up. And I goes, excuse me, is this your car? And she was like, yeah. And I goes, you know you have another one. And the daughter pointed out that she had a second one. And I goes, you just got €210 fine for a €2.50 parking that you could have parked elsewhere. I said, I had to wait around 15, 20 minutes waiting for whoever it was to come back to the car. to be able to put my girlfriend's wheelchair into my boot. I just look at the wheelchair. My girlfriend's inside. She can't use her legs. And you're after impeding me from going on about my day. That's 15, 20 minutes of my day that I'm not going to get back.
Okay. Response?
I didn't see it. I'm like, it's painted white, completely white, with big dashes. You're not allowed parked there whatsoever.
She parked on top of a massive, big, white-painted X.
Yeah, yeah.
X does not mean park here.
I know, but just some people's brain cells these days.
What did she say, though?
Me, like, she didn't really comment, like. She was like, but what she commented to me was, are you happy? I goes, no, I'm not happy.
Are you happy?
I had to spend 15, 20 minutes standing around, and I kept praying that you got €210 fine for a €2.50 parking that you could have parked elsewhere, and I could have had my day gone out on all the boats, but no, I had to stand here 15, 20 minutes waiting for you, and she just kept going, are you happy? And the traffic warden was nearby, and he came back and told me to just carry on, and let her go. I was like, no, she needs to know that she can't park there.
Okay. Well, I wonder, when she kept on saying, are you happy, are you happy, did she kind of mean, are you happy now that I got a €210 fine? That's probably what she meant, was it?
Probably. I didn't care because she parked in the space that she shouldn't have been. I wasn't going to be happy because I had to spend 15, 20 minutes of my day.
But it's not about the money. It's just about the ignorance of doing it in the first place. It's also very disrespectful to people who have challenges in life with regards to living life in a wheelchair. It's not easy.
But those disabled bays were originally designed for wheelchair users.
Okay.
And now they're giving badges to everyone. But, like, I get that if they have a badge, they can park there. But, like, any other time that I go to a disabled bay, there's somebody parked there. And I tell my girlfriend, just hold on there a second, I'll hop out and I'll go home and I'll speak to him.
And do you?
90% of the time. Oh yeah, always.
What's the reaction?
And go, can you actually vacate the disabled bay? Because I go, my girlfriend has a wheelchair van, she requires it because she's got a wheelchair. And 90% of the time, we get a massive abuse from people. And other responses are always like, oh, my legs. I'm like, my girlfriend has a wheelchair. She cannot go anywhere without her wheelchair.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I'm only 2 minutes. It's like, no, it's not 2 minutes. I've been here for the last 5 minutes and you haven't been anywhere in 2 minutes.
And, and so they get defensive or they get argumentative, do they?
They get defensive and argumentative towards me and about my girlfriend. And I'm like, yeah, it's a wheelchair user who requires this. You do not require it. Oh, my leg, and all this kind of crap. And I'm like, do you want me to put you in a wheelchair and then you can go, oh, my leg?
I suppose.
I said, I'll happily give you a right to actually park here if you'd like. And
That's a little bit too much threatening behaviour, I think.
I know that. I get that. But, like, seriously, I even turn around and goes, one of the days, it may not be you, it'll be one of your family members will end up with some form of disability.
Yeah.
And you will require this parking space, and you will then see how I and how she feels
about being. Absolutely.
But when somebody parks in there, but they're like, oh, you know, the F words and all that kind of crack towards us. There was a couple of times where one person actually turned around to my girlfriend. She was parked in the disabled bay and there was a car in front of her. And she turned around to the driver and goes, you know, that's a disabled bay. Do you know what that driver's response was?
What?
Oh, it's half six. Half six in the evening. I'm allowed to park here. And she was like, what? Half six?
He's the moron. That's just a moron, like, that anything changes at half past six. Yeah. All right. Okay.
There's certain parking places around the city that you can park after half six, half days, but the disabled bay has to be free.
I get it. I feel your frustration. Thanks, Jeff. Regards to you and to Sarah. Meanwhile, Catherine, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Thanks for coming on air. It's not everybody's cup of tea, so I do appreciate it. Fair play to you. Go ahead.
No, it's not my cup of tea either. But look, I've been threatening for years to do it, and it's just frustration more than anything else.
Yeah.
And I heard a few people on about disabilities. I'm a full-time wheelchair user, and that doesn't drive and rely on public transport. And Bus Éireann put on fantastic express buses, accessible. that you can wheel with a lift to the back of the bus.
Yeah.
You go on, they lift you up, you wheel, the back seat is open, and you wheel in. The only problem is that the only two stops they go to is Cork straight to Dublin, Cork straight to Waterford.
Mm.
No stops in between.
So do you're using the stops in between, are you?
I can't. No.
But where are you going? You're not going to Dublin. Where would you be going? Be going somewhere else?
Well, I rang them on Monday. Like, I have a friend in Castle Clonbert, sister, and I wanted to go down. Like, for the last, I don't know how many years, she's down there 15 years. I ring every single year at the start of the summer, and I've been told the same thing. No stops, no bus going to Castle Clonbert. They can't take off, they call them city buses, like the number 202 or the number 203.
Mm.
And even if you ring in advance, they said no. And so I rang again just to see if there's anything change up, and nothing. I can go down to the bus station and go from Cork to Waterford straight. Can't stop in between, nowhere. And go from Cork to Dublin with no stops in between.
Okay. And how easy is it to get on and off a train with a wheelchair?
In fairness to the train, you give them 24 hours notice and they'll have the ramps out and they're extremely accommodating.
Okay.
But you give notice so that they know that there's a wheelchair using or going on the train. I'm okay with trains. I can go to Crosshaven. And that's about it. Mm. I can't go to Yall. I can't go to... And that's only one section of what's going on. Like, I mean, any building that's been done in Cork and all these new venues opening up, if any way they're listed, that then means they don't have to put in a lift or wheelchair bathrooms.
If they're old buildings, they don't. But all the new buildings...
Yeah. I mean, simple things like HMVs out on Patrick Street.
Yeah.
There's a bell on the outside the door with a wheelchair saying that you press that, somebody will come down the stairs to you.
For what? What happens when they come down? They come down, they put out a ramp.
The ramp is so steep that they'll come down the steps, you tell them what you want, we exchange money outside the door, and they go back in.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't go in to buy the steps.
The ramp is lethal.
So you have to know what you want, give them the money outside, they go in and get it, and they bring it out to you.
Yeah.
That's bizarre, isn't it?
And that's one shop. It's not like if there's not a venue, if I want to go and see something, and it's upstairs, I'm able to, like, I don't walk, but I can get off my chair and go up steps, which I have done, to the legs of the path, to the legs of the Savoy.
Yeah.
You know, when it was open.
So we're talking about accessibility. You don't drive, so you're just talking about public services or retail places or social.
Gorgeous buses pull on, and you can go to two places. And I am like, it's not for the will of not trying. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It's a frust. I mean, beside parking, all that when you're in somebody else's car for parking, which is a nightmare. It's just the frustration is absolutely shocking.
Appreciate that.
And there was a man made Lord Mayor down towards Castletown in a chair. So I was like, here we go, a couple of years ago, they'll have to do something. Nothing. Nothing.
Mm.
And like it's simple.
Can you get a disabled space at Kent Station?
Oh yeah, that's fine. It's hit and miss because it's normally packed. But like, I will get off somewhere and somebody will take out my chair and I'll wheel in. Do you know what I mean? There's very little parking spaces in Kent Station and normally are full.
Yeah.
That's the problem with parking
spaces. So there's a lot of talk about Kent Station recently. They're almost like the victims of their own success. Everybody's back taking the trains and what have you. But everybody's complaining that people are parking up there all day and a lot of them aren't taking the train. They're going off to work.
They're going on the train and returning on it.
It's $9.50 for 24 hours. It's very cheap. When I was looking at this story last week then, I noticed that many people possibly don't know that there's an even bigger car park at the other side of Kent, where you go down the tunnel and up the other side. Do people know I know about that
announcement about 2 months ago, yeah, because their lift was broken in Kent Station. And do you know the way you go down the hill, we say to go back up the hill?
Yes.
I was going on a train, and a lovely, lovely man helped me come when I was getting off the train, and he said, have you someone picking you up? And I said, I have. They're outside the door, the main door, as I would say. He said, that's unfortunate. No, he said, the lift is broken, so we're going to have to push up the hill. No, I'm strong.
It is hill, because you go down under the track, and then it's another climb.
Yeah.
So no, I'm only mentioning it because a lot of people don't know. But you got pushed by someone, did you?
Well, I done the majority myself. I just felt like I'm good myself. He went behind me just in case I needed
tough.
It.
Right. But okay.
The lift was out of action.
Okay, let me talk to Jerry. Thanks, Catherine. Glad you came on. The whole aspect of Kent Station is an interesting one, because there is another car park and many people didn't know about it, and they'd rock up to Kent, particularly if you're trying to get a 9 o'clock or a half nine or whatever. All of the parking is gone and it'll be gone for the entire day. The big problem, of course, that some people are saying is that people are using it to park and they're walking away into town. If you go on to their webpage or the app that can tell you all about parking there, it says customers only, customers only, trying to discourage people from using the parking because it is cheap. Nothing really with regards to Irish Rail is cheap apart from maybe the parking. I mean, you look at that. I don't know why in the name of God they're able to sell full fare tickets to people who then end up standing all the way to Dublin. And then it's made even worse by the guy on the tannoy saying, enjoy the journey. But anyway, text 0868104106. Jerry, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you keeping?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Regarding disabled parking, excuse me, I'm a blue badge holder myself. I'm not in a wheelchair, but I have spinal issues. And as you know, we have to pay for the parking permit. And I have noticed an awful lot of women in particular, I hate saying this, that park outside supermarkets without a blue badge. And if you challenge them, 9 times out of 10, you will get abused. I have been abused verbally.
Like, what have people said to you?
Well, I'm only going in there for a few minutes. A lady said to me one day when I said that's why, I said, look, you know, blue badge, you shouldn't park there. I have one, all right, but it's at home, or I can't find it. It's in the dash, and I say, well, it's in the glove box. I said it's supposed to be on the dash.
If it was inside the car in the glove box, wouldn't they go back when you say it to them and then put it up?
Well, some of them wouldn't bother.
Because it's not there. It doesn't exist.
No, they don't have them. A woman, I said, two ladies, one day, one of them was coming over the supermarket with a big case of alcohol, and she was parked across, basically. She was taking up two wheelchair spaces. And I said, Mrs., that's terrible parking. I said, do you have a blue badge? Why, are you a guard?
Oh, God almighty, what a smart aleck.
I said, I wish I was, because if I was, I'd be prosecuting you.
Did she respond to that?
Why, I was told to mind my own business and go on away and get a life for myself. I said, I have a life, but as you can see, it's not the best one.
That's a good answer. It's a much more challenged life than her, being able to go in, park across two disabled spaces for her case of beer. Isn't it well for her, like, in her box of beer?
Oh, yeah. I didn't give a damn. And listen, I've taken up the issue with men as well, and most of them, in fairness, would apologise, but I definitely find, unfortunately, and I hate saying it, not personal against women, they're the worst.
Okay, the men you found apologised, the women got defensive.
Yeah, they're totally like sixpence, a lot of them.
Yeah.
But outside of that, Neil, there's, you know, if you, for example, I had to go into the intro centre there recently in George's Quay. There's only one disabled parking spot in George's Quay, and that's down before you come to the intro centre next to the corner there on White Street. Now, that space is taken up a lot of the time by somebody obviously walking in the building there, and that's the only parking.
And is that permissible and lawful, that somebody with a blue badge, here's hoping that it is their own blue badge, that they can use it as their own exclusive parking spot all day, every day.
I stand to be corrected, but I think, as far as I know, they are entitled to it.
They are.
I think no, and as I said, I haven't checked the law on it.
But you don't pay. You don't have to pay for that. You don't have to pay by the hour or anything. That's free with the blue badge, and if you have it, you can park
there
all
day. Blue badge,
all
right?
Day.
But you get people then, and they also go out and they put up a blue badge, and they say, I have a blue badge, but it's for my son and my daughter,
who wouldn't
be in the car, or the mother, right? I had a case one day where a guy in the van was parked in the disabled spot, and I said, come here, you could be prosecuted there for that. And, I have a badge, and I said, where is it? Well, my mother has this, she's inside the supermarket with it. I said you don't need a blue badge to go around with a trolley.
They come up with the greatest excuses, you know? They really
do. Fantastic. Some of them are brilliant.
The fixed charge amount for misusing a disabled parking badge is €200. It increases to €300 if you don't pay with 28 days. So if you're to be using somebody else's blue badge, there's only a €200 fine. It should be higher than that, shouldn't it?
It should, of course. And like, I pointed out, like, I got into a right row one day in the supermarket car park with a fella driving a big old Mercedes, and who was parked without a badge, obviously, and he wasn't disabled, he had no disability issues. And the guy was seriously up, he nearly came to blows, you know.
In what way?
He got very aggressive towards me, and I said, look, I said, do you realise? I said, I was like you one time. I was able to walk, I was able to run, I was able to do everything I wanted to do, but unfortunately, no, I said, I'm disabled. And I said, do you not realise that someday you are a member of your family could end up like this?
Yeah, I know you have a very reasoned response to people. You're very calm. You're actually well-mannered when you speak to them. But I think...
Well, I always point out, you don't have a blue badge, do you? I'm only telling you this because you could be prosecuted.
And he said, and what did the big fella in the big Mercedes say?
Well, he didn't give a damn. His attitude was, he told me straight to my face. Listen, he said, he was a big tall fella, he looking down at me, and he said, listen, I park where I like, when I like, and it's none of your business.
Charming.
So, in fairness to the security staff in the shopping centre, they saw it on camera, and they came out, and they said, get into your car now and move straight away, or the guards will arrive. So he begrudgingly got into the car.
You can be sure he did, because he's a coward at the end of it then.
He was a coward.
Do you know, it's very interesting the way people behave. I'm wondering, you see, if they're caught out or somebody challenges them on something, all too often, and maybe it's our natural response to the thing, is to go on the defensive and almost on the offensive to defend ourselves.
Well, you get the odd person that would apologise, but many times they don't say, what's your problem? I'm only going in to pick up a message.
But you know,
also,
I was reading some court cases on this yesterday, or was it today before? Not only people using somebody else's blue badges, but some people are using the blue badges of dead people.
That's frightening. I know. That's terrible.
Seriously.
But Neil, I had reason to go into a small supermarket recently, and there was a man parked in a disabled spot. Now, he did have a blue badge, okay? But he came out with a newspaper, and he sat in the car. He was there. I was watching him for the cracks, right? I waited 10 minutes. And he was still there reading the paper. He was on his own.
Could somebody who has a blue badge, who hasn't had a wheelchair, use a regular parking space? Perhaps
I try, depending on...
They may have a disability, is what I'm saying, right? And they might be able to walk long distances. But if there was a handy space, but it wasn't a disabled, would it make sense to them, all right, I'll use this one. So there's somebody with a wheelchair or maybe a wheelchair accessible.
Correct, somebody worse off than
rather than sitting reading a newspaper in a disability spot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He was able to walk into the shop, he walked out. Right. No, he did have a blue badge displayed on the car, but he sat in the car. I was there 10 minutes and...
No, it's frustrating because again, people would be saying, "What's somebody who can walk in and out for a newspaper doing with a blue badge anyway?" You know,
exactly. Right. No, okay. The man might be able to walk far. In fairness, he didn't have to walk.
Well, if
far.
He could walk in to get a newspaper, he could have parked in a regular spot.
But to be honest, he did. He could have. Yeah. No, I All would right. often, if I went to a place, we say, and there's only one disabled parking space left. And if I felt able enough to walk to where I need to walk, I would park in a normal park.
Fair play to you. Fair play. Okay, Jerry, thank you. I'm going to plough ahead if you don't mind. I want to do some more texts as well this side of 11, but another namesake of yours, another Jerry. Good morning, Jerry. You applied for a blue badge, is it?
Yeah. Okay. I applied for a blue badge the end of October, start of November.
Okay. Okay. Do you mind me asking? Do you mind me asking why you need it?
I'm a double amputee. I'm blind. I have dialysis three times a week, and I'm a diabetic.
God, you're fighting the good fight, aren't you?
I'm screwed.
Says he with a laugh.
I know, but it is what it is. Like, you know what I mean. You just get on with it, like, you know?
Okay.
You have no choice, like, you know?
And did you have surgery on both legs at the same time?
No, there was 9 months of a difference. See, the one leg was fine, and then the other one just, like, it just went. The vessels went.
Was it sepsis?
Yeah. It was, yeah. Sepsis. The sepsis in the first leg. And the second leg, then it lasted for 11 months, and then I went after that. They told me that I had no choice, I had to take it off, or I'd be coming back in 6 to 8 weeks, or did that.
God almighty. That's hard, that's very hard to prepare yourself for something like that. And then how do you deal with it afterwards? It's a massive impact on you.
I'll not be funny with you, like, it is rough, like, you know. Everything you try to get done, like, you know, even try to go out to go to the shop, I can't do that. Like.
And it's made worse by the fact, I suppose, that you were at one stage in your life for a long time able to do all of those things.
Yeah. So, like I'm 52 and I had all the operations in 2016, stuff in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you mean, I was 40-odd, like.
And I'm thinking as well of, and I don't mean to be overly negative about it, and it's very kind of you to talk with me about this topic, but there must be an awful sense of the robbing of your independence, kind of, you know?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I mean, I'm not being funny about it. Like, I mean, they tell you things, like, you know, like you can't light the fire to keep warm. Like, you know, you have to use the heating.
You can't throw your coat on and just head out, kind of thing. There's a lot of planning involved. Whereas, you know.
I got to have people in the house, like, to bring me, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was waiting for, what would you call it? Like, you know, they put in a safety rail.
Yeah.
Outside the door of the house.
Yeah.
For over, I'd say, nearly 2 years.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
You better go outside the door, like.
Yeah, you're trapped without it, and there is a group. They're kind of like they're a group of volunteers. I can't remember the name of the organization. You might know it, but they literally are people from the community. A lot of them are tradespeople, and they go out and they do this work for people voluntarily without any charge. They put in those rails outside the front door. They put in one in the bathroom. We did it for my father. And you're going through the system, you'd be forever. Whereas they do it themselves.
Way forever, like.
But tell me how... Go ahead.
No, I have, like, I don't have a back arm. Like, my back arm is slabbed. But if you know any gardeners or, you know, I need someone to cut the brambles.
I know.
Because I can't go and do it.
Simple things. And are you 100% blind, or is it partially sighted?
Yeah. No, I'm gone. It's gone completely.
How did that happen?
I had it's like heavy dose glaucoma.
Do you have cataracts and stuff like that?
Yeah, I had it taken out, and it was grand for about nearly a year, and then the blood pressure in the back of the eyes got heavier and heavier and heavier, and then the other sight went.
Were you told to prepare for complete loss?
I was told I got 6 months. Very nice man inside the hospital, very nice doctor.
And was he right? Was it 6 months?
He could have had it down to the day. It was that quick.
So over the period of 6 months, you were literally saying goodbye to your sight, and it was diminishing every day. How was it? Must be an awful lot of courage and bravery to deal with that. Saying goodbye to the light.
The one thing that will drive you crack, you can't see your kids.
My God, I mean, you're an amazing man.
Like, I have a daughter, and she is, she's lovely. Like, you know, I love her to death. But, and like, the last time I saw her, was I see her like every couple of weeks because she's in college and stuff. Like, you know, but like the last time I saw her properly, the end of the year, like, was nearly three years ago.
Oh my God.
I don't know if she's got long hair. I don't know, like, you know, like, you know what I mean, like, I haven't seen her get older, like, you know what I mean. She'll always be 17 to me, or 18 or something.
Do you feel her face
sometimes?
You're an amazing man. You're just an amazing man. No matter what I say to you, you're positive. You just deal with it. You're incredibly courageous.
Things will drive you cracked, all right. Like, some things will drive you demented. Like, fellas not picking up dog poop. They can get caught in the wheels of the wheelchair, you know? And if you don't know it,
you don't know it.
Your hands in it, then you're spinning the wheels, and all of a sudden you poop all over your hands.
That is so exasperating for somebody who is dealing with challenges like you have, for something like that to happen. It might sound simple to others, but it can be enough to just drive you over the edge, you know.
And
so it's
certain places in town, then, like, you know, I can't go into the shops, like, you know, because they don't let wheelchairs in, or, you know, they have issues, like, you know.
But you can't do anything independently, so do you have somebody to assist you when you go out?
I have this girl, she's with Cork Independent Living. It's like, they come out, they bring you into town for the day, like, I get 3 hours.
And do you enjoy that? You're a double amputee in a wheelchair,
Jesus,
with no sight.
Man, that's like the highlight of my week. Like,
why?
You know
why
I mean?
Is it like? What can you actually experience in a wheelchair in the dark?
We go to town. We go to you know, the courthouse.
Yeah.
The old courthouse, the one on Washington Street.
Yeah.
And behind that, there's a secondhand record shop there, you know.
There is, yeah.
I love that place. I collect albums, like, I collect a lot of vinyl, like, a lot of vinyl.
And will your assistant then tell you, call out the albums?
Yeah. Or I'll send her in, and, like, she'll ask, like, have they got something for me, and if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. Like, you know, but, like, even online, like, she's great that way. Like, she'll help me with things. Like, she's bringing me to Crowded House.
You love your music, like, do you?
Oh, Jesus, yeah, no, it's not like it. I'm addicted to it. Like,
were you always that way, or did music and sound become more important to you when you became sightless?
It became more important afterwards. You know, they say, like, you know, you think your senses pick up.
Yeah.
They do. They honestly do.
So, like, because you are very positive, you're very optimistic, and you're glass half full as opposed to glass half empty. But yet, and again, no matter what I throw at you, you've got to come back on it. But, you know, day and night are the same. You can experience the seasons only because of what the temperature is, or a bit of wind. You know, you can't see the beauty of the countryside or the sea or the beach or anything like that anymore. And on top of that, you're not bitter, even though you've lost both your legs.
Yeah.
How do you manage to find the strength?
I honestly don't know, because I'm not religious. Like, I don't have faith, like, you know what I mean? Not really, like, you know. It's more positivity, I suppose.
No, that's exactly what it is. It's positivity. Is it because you just have to make the best of what you have?
Exactly. Like, if you're nice to people, they'll be nice to you, like. But then again, like, you do get around the place, like, you know what I mean?
And so the issue with the blue badge is, you haven't even got one.
We sent off for the badge. You know, like, you send off and the pack comes back in the post. And you fill out the form, then, and then the doctor has to sign the form, and then you send it back to get the badge with the 35 euro or the 33 euro as well. But I'm still waiting on the pack.
Since last October?
Yeah.
October, November, December, January, February, March, April. No. We're almost into May. 8 months.
I think it was the middle of February, I got on to my social worker and said it to him, I'm still waiting on the form. So he sent off an email to him, and it still hasn't come.
It still hasn't come?
No.
That's just frustrating. Is it not enough that you got to be dealing with it, and you have others then abusing those blue badges, and you clearly are a candidate for them, you know?
Fair is fair, like.
What do you miss? Do you miss going to a film? Do you miss television? Do you miss reading a book?
No. There's stuff there for that. Like, you know what I mean? There's Audible, which I'm addicted to. The library are brilliant, especially the library outside Wilton.
Yeah.
Oh, they've got some really nice people walking out there. Like, I would like to. They can't do enough here with them.
You're just inspirational, you know that? Anybody ever tell you that?
No. You showed me.
Well, I'm telling you now, people listening now will say the same. An incredibly powerful man, very positive in spite of everything you went through. You really are. That's a disgrace about the blue badge. They should hang their head in shame that there would be 8 months just to, you know, acknowledge a couple of forms, stamp the badge and send it back to you, make your life that little bit easier, you know?
It would be great for, like, Jackie, because, like, if we go to town in her car, we'd have to park in a car park. And then there's the price of the car park.
No, sure, like, I know. And just listen, it's obvious why it would be beneficial to her. It certainly is.
Yeah.
It certainly is. But listen, Jenny Mac, it's amazing. Calls like yours come along from time to time, and they just take the wind out of my sails. I'm pretty much speechless listening to all you have to deal with. Do you love your music? You're sorted for Crowded House. What about, do you like Damien Dempsey, Van Morrison?
Van Morrison. I just like Van Morrison.
I'll tell you what, I'm not going to do the Van Morrison giveaway today, and people will understand the reasons why. I'm just going to give you the tickets for the Van Morrison gig, all right?
Are you serious?
Deadly serious. Serious. Deadly serious.
Oh, Jesus, man. Thanks a lot.
See, there you go. You're doing it again. You're being positive.
No, that's
I wasn't expecting that, right?
Well, you've got it. So Van Morrison is playing the Marquee on the 31st of May. I want you to go there with whoever you choose to take with you. It's lovely chatting with you, Gerry. You're a diamond, man. Stay in touch.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Thanks
right,
very
pal.
Much.
Okay. Stop, man. You're making me cry. Stay on the phone there, will you? I want to get your full details. Back after 11. Text 0868104106. And we think we have problems.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
I'm just taking a flyer here without wanting to overly confuse things, right? Anyway, be part of the conversation yourself, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. But I was due to give away a pair of tickets for Van Morrison this morning and indeed a pair of tickets for Damien Dempsey. But that inspirational story of challenges in his life, but getting on with it in spite of being a double amputee and blind, it's very sad, like, that his last memory of his daughter's face was, you know, maybe 3 years ago. But anyway, it wasn't, and he wasn't talking to us, telling us his story from a poor me point of view. It's quite the opposite. Anyway, I want Gerry to go to the Van Morrison gig, but I and enjoy it. Now, I'll be giving away lots more Live at the Marquee tickets, believe me. It's just a kind of an early dive into the pool of tickets, but I'll be coming back to it again in the coming weeks for lots of different gigs right across the Live at the Marquee sessions. Sugar Babes, Lyra. It's a great gig last night with Lyra, the Red FM gig. Brian Adams, Damien Dempsey, the Coronas, Gavin James, Christy Moore, John Bishop, lots more like that. But so I still have the Damien Dempsey tickets to give away. So I'm going to play a Van Morrison song, right? So you're going to hear that Van Morrison song, but the tickets are for Damien Dempsey. And of all of the gigs, if it were me, and I'm being selfish about this, that's the gig I go to, the Damien Dempsey gig, because he's just a powerhouse of talent. So you're going to hear a Van Morrison song between now and midday. I think it's the first time in living memory that anyone has given away tickets for one act by playing the music of an act of another one. But that's me. I'm just like that. So caller 9 when you hear the Van Morrison song. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. Call's on the way.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
I always love when people push back and clarify things, or indeed look for corrections. I think this is done in a very nice way. John is in France. He has Georgian friends there in France. He listens overseas. He's picking up on a point I was saying yesterday, with an awful lot of men coming from Georgia, where there doesn't seem to be any issues of war or problems for people living in Georgia. Wouldn't be on a list of dangerous countries, he says. All is good, I hope. I'm listening this morning. I'd like just to correct you. The Georgian parliament is controlled by a Russian-influenced political party who are trying to bring in laws to silence independent journalism and any kind of free speech. Much like Ireland, then, I see. There are two Russian-occupied territories as well. Georgian television is becoming more and more influenced by Russian fake news and Russian propaganda. These may be the reasons for emigration. Anyway, have a good day, guys. John in France with Georgian friends. So thank you for that. And I will come back to this, I promise you, with regards to disability issues and blue badges and the abuse of it. John Murphy, the peace commissioner and the disability advocate on Leaside, said to me by text, he said, once you have a disability parking permit, the user is allowed to use the pass and park in that space with no time limit on it. The Cork Access Group are trying to limit the time limit down to 2 hours, as opposed to somebody legally with a pass using a disability parking space with the permit all day, say 5 days a week. They want that reduced, I imagine, because they don't feel it's fair on other users. And they want it reduced to a limit of 2 hours. But he did say, you will find that with many, many people with disabilities, they will always, if possible, try and use other spaces first. That's his experience of it. And thank you for that, Johnny. Text 0868 104 106. I was talking earlier on this morning about an old tradition on Leaside that is still with us, running away money. Huge response to that. Here's some more. Sheila says, it's very important to put a few bob away week in, week out, even if it's only a bit of loose change. At the end of the day, it all adds up. Every woman should save. It's not just about runaway money, but they are independent and they need their independence and should not need any man to see that they have power over you. Don't allow any man to have power over you. Lorraine says, I have one. We were always told growing up how important it was to have a runaway money fund. Tracy's mum always told her to have it. Cliona's 20 years having hers. You never know when you might need it. What would be a typical reason, Cliona, as to why you would need it? Is it to get away if things weren't working out, or if you were in a dangerous situation? Or is it for an unexpected bill. Rainy day money, yes. But if you don't have equal access to your finances as a couple, then for me, that would be a huge red flag in the first place, says Ryan. Jean always said she says, my mother had one. She called it her running away money. Thanks for bringing back the memory. Laura says, everyone should have runaway money, but the government and the rich people make sure that any of us can't. And then one or two more. I wonder where they were all running away to. I don't know. And I don't know how often, say back in the day, when, you know, the social structures were very different and you had many people at home all day, every day with children, you know, weren't able to go out to work. It wasn't acceptable for wives to work, say, if you look at their own scenarios in the 60s and 70s, it was very commonplace for the wife and the mother to be at home. That was very, very difficult and challenging. It must have been hugely impactful as well. You know, the realization that now it's going to be children, now it's going to be a house. And for some, of course, and maybe many, it was very, very fulfilling. But I don't believe it was for every woman. And I never have. And I think that to some extent, I think that there were a portion of them were actually trapped and very saddened by that realization. And added to the fact, if you've got a difficult marriage or a brute of a husband or a man who you didn't see as being a brute when you were dating and then turned out to be a nightmare. That's the reasons behind runaway money, wasn't it? To be able to get out of a situation like that, I guess. So just one or two more. Teresa says, I first heard about this from the Gay Byrne radio show all those years ago. He always said that women should have runaway money. R.I.P. Gay Byrne. Vicky says, to quote my own mother, she'd say, have the runaway money if it's only the train fare to Dublin. And Vicky says, sure, I know nobody in Dublin. I used to say to her. I love it. As a mother, I keep runaway money to make sure I can provide for my kids if their father comes home drunk once more or again and again, which obviously is happening, unfortunately. Helena says, I have mine. The husband knows about it, but he doesn't know how much. On a bad day, he'll say, how much more feck-off money do you need now? I gave my missus money one time to run away, says Turlock. She spent it on clothes and nights out, and I'm still stuck with her. Oh, boom. Anyway, I suppose the serious and the funny. So text 0868104106. Right. I'll come back to different calls, again, between now and midday, and lots of different texts on different topics, and I mean lots of them. But I mentioned a story in the papers this morning. Last week, it was a developer in Blackpool who's trying to do the right thing and to build an apartment block, four stories high, to build lots of apartments so that people can live in them. And time after time, this developer's been knocked back by planning. Now, I get that there are rules and regulations, but surely be to God, there could be ways around things where planning wouldn't be rejected time and time again. Owen English has the story of a childcare company's second attempt to secure planning for a creche in Carrigaline, earmarked. It's a massive explosion in population and chimney pots down in Carrigaline. And all of those housing estates and all of those chimney pots, many of them will have children. So they're expecting a significant population growth in that area. So in spite of wanting to actually to have, they've got 400 parents have expressed an interest in securing places for their children at the proposed facility. But it's been knocked back again for planning. No idea why. It must be very exasperating for those behind it. That includes Kate Gaffney, and she joins me by phone. Kate, good morning.
Thank you so much, Neil, for having me on. The location is Ballincollig.
My apologies. How did I get Carrigaline into my head?
We're opening a preschool in September in Carrigaline.
My bad. So you're opening one in Carrigaline. The planning is for another area that has had a big increase in population, Ballincollig. Yeah. So do you have 400 parents who said, could I have a spot, please?
Yeah, we absolutely do. So we put out expression of interest last year just to support our first application to show that there was a demand. We also got Cork City Childcare to support the planning application, saying they had absolutely no issues in where it was going to be, and that Ballincollig was in a crisis. It was in a critical point for childcare. So those parents literally have been contacting us week in, week out. Has there been any update? We refused our first planning.
Okay. Why? Let me just ask you a little bit about this. Is this a planning issue because of, say, change of use or something?
It is. It's so one of the issues is that they want standalone buildings for creches. They want those buildings to be on their own, for them to be like in estates. But we would kind of go back and say, okay, for every developer who builds 74 houses, they have to have childcare. Then those childcare buildings are usually the last thing to be built on the estate. They are shells, so by the time they're built, you're asked to go in, have a look. You're talking 800,000 plus that to buy these buildings, and then you have to fit it out. So I would think you'd be in over a million before you put a table and chair into it, whereas we were looking at an empty office building in Ballincollig that we would be changing the use of. We didn't have one objection to any of the businesses around there, not one public objection. If anything, there was support from all aspects.
Any health and safety issue, any fire department issue, anything like that?
No department. No department, even water services, sanitary, road had an issue.
You might have an issue in something like that. I'm only playing devil's advocate here now, but absolutely. Do you have any outdoor area for children to be able to play in the daylight?
Yeah, so due to TUSA's regulations, you have to have, so this is why it's harder to find as well, childcare premises because of TUSA's regulations. So we had a playground as well, and we had redesigned it twice for the planning application. And we had, you know, we're going to put in natural materials, which would have been anyway inspected by TUSA when they came in. So I suppose if people don't know, like, we have to go through planning first. But that still doesn't mean you can open a childcare, even if you get approval. You then have to give 2 or 3 months' notice. They'll come in, they'll inspect, and then tell you what changes they need to be
like
in.
You know, for something like that, you can't just drive on and then apply for retention or anything. No.
Okay. So it's like a step process. So you have to get your planning permission, then you actually have to do the building work, and then you have to let TUSA know.
Okay, so they said in their decision it was conflicting uses. Safe pedestrian. I thought you put in I thought there's a zebra crossing going in there.
Yeah, zebra crossing, pedestrian access.
So what's their problem? Potential noise disturbance for adjoining units.
Not one of those people had any reservations around the business.
So there wasn't even an objection from a business that didn't want to hear children laughing or crying or shouting. No one objected.
No.
How do you feel?
We just feel a little bit deflated. We find it, very short-sighted with the need in Ballincollig. And I suppose it should be pointed out that they want standalone creches. But in Cork City Council themselves, in City Hall, has attached a creche onto City Hall that is not a standalone. So how can
City
you...
City Hall's creche?
Is attached to City Hall.
So there's a creche for staff's children, is there?
Yeah, I presume like staff go in there, but it is attached. So
in what way attached? Is it attached
to City Hall? You know where the car park is?
I do.
Behind.
Is it bricks and mortar? Is it a mobile unit? What is it?
No, it's within City Hall.
Oh, it's in the building?
Yeah.
So why is it good for them and not for you?
Exactly. So why can they have childcare within City Hall and the parents who are literally heartbroken, stressed out, travelling 27 kilometres in childcare in Ballincollig cannot have that?
And do they have an outdoor play area for the, don't mean to pin you to your collar now, but do they have an outdoor play area for the creche in City Hall?
So this is what I've been trying to find out. I've been told they do not, but I can't confirm that.
Okay. So what I'm hearing now, unless it's corrected, is that they are themselves in breach of the planning laws that you've been knocked back by.
Yes, but I do not know for 100% if they don't have an outdoor. I've just been told today.
But they certainly they don't have a standalone creche, which they're insisting you're...
absolutely not.
But sure, that's complete mockery. That's not right.
Yeah, so we just feel like if we had come back with questions and queries on what we were doing, we would have addressed them. But to get a flat out refusal on kind of points that you're kind of going, you're throwing your hands up, you're saying there's a critical crisis here in childcare. People are literally like, people
can't
go back
to
work.
Why can't they see that? They can't go back to work because they need creche facilities for their children. Yeah. They go back to work because they need to pay the bills, pay the mortgage and put a roof over their heads.
And there's actually one lady said she doesn't think she can have a second child, the stress of trying to get her first child into
Have you
child
had
care.
To go back now to tell the 400 parents
So we issued a statement because we felt we should, because so many people were contacting us, and some of the emails had bounced back. So we just said we'd put out a statement now to let them know that they need to be looking at alternatives.
It's with heavy heart we must inform you of the disappointing news that our planning permission has been denied by Cork City Council for the second time. We share in your disappointment, especially considering the overwhelming response we received from over 380 parents expressing interest in enrolling their children, ranging from those starting this September to those slated to begin as far away as 2027.
Yeah. And we would have, like, if Cork City Council had said, look, we have queries on X, Y, and Z, can you answer them? Or this is the condition. We would have absolutely done anything we could have to be open for those people in September. It's just really affecting people. There's a complete disconnect from government to local authority to us even. Like we got an email 2 months ago from Minister O'Gorman saying, we want you to expand services. Please expand. If you expand, we are going to give you a grant. We're going to help with the cost of this expansion. We have to expand childcare. And then you have small to medium businesses like us trying to expand.
And the same rules don't apply. They get bended and twisted. We see in recent issues with regards to Ukrainian war refugees, the much of where they want them to live doesn't require planning permission for change of use. They're also suggesting like that they can adapt office buildings and make apartments out of them. They're talking about modular housing. None of this is ideal. But yes... Like, are they completely out of touch the needs of families with children, or what?
I think they must be. If they're not seeing how it's affecting people and affecting their home life, and it's not just Ballincollig, but in particular, like Cork City Council's own strategic plan says that Cork is going to be one of the fastest growing cities in Ireland by 2040, and Ballincollig is the fastest growing town due to have an extra 12,500 people living in it by 2040.
Kate, if they're head on the right way, they'd be giving you a grant to help you to open your business.
Thanks.
Shouldn't they, like?
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing drama, you're doing musical theatre, you're doing dance classes, you're doing all sorts of extracurricular stuff in Ballincollig for kids. They should be holding your hand and thanking you.
Thanks, me. But yeah, we do, and it was because we had our classes in Ballincollig, and to supplement, we did an after school, and from there we saw this huge demand for the creche. It's been overwhelming in Ballincollig.
Makes no sense. It's infuriating. You don't mind if we get in touch with City Council to work out what's going on in their heads that they would make this decision at a time when places are desperately needed. So there's people travelling. I was reading Owen English this morning saying that people are travelling 30 and 40 kilometres each way to drop off a child. Could you imagine that?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of them was one of the parents, and she said, I'm reading your email now, and I could just cry. I cannot believe it's been turned down again. Like, people were literally hanging on and trying to use annual leave to stay home with their kids and their parental leave to try and get this childcare place.
Okay.
And I'm not asking them to put us into a creche that's completely unsuitable. I'm not asking them to, like, we have an after school in Castle West Shopping Centre, which would be unsuitable for a creche. It has no outdoor area. It wouldn't be suitable. We're not asking for something that's unreasonable. Has been okayed by Cork City Childcare.
I understand. The Chief Executive Anne Doherty in the past, when we were dealing with the story of Noonan's Road and the conditions that people are living in, said she was going to kick ass. I would suggest that the City Manager Anne Doherty should kick ass on this one as well. I'm going to get in touch with them and see what kind of rationale they use to make these kind of decisions. Would you mind if I do that? And maybe,
absolutely.
And tell me, just before I let you go for now, are you going to try again or what?
We don't know. At this stage, Neil, like, we're after spending €20,000 on two planning applications in Ballincollig. We, like myself and my business partner, how long do you keep going at
something? Oh, it's very frustrating. I know. I should take all the good out of it.
We don't know. We'll know. We have a meeting tomorrow with our own planning consultants and we'll know a bit more then.
Okay. Stay in touch, Kate. I'll see what they say as a response. I'll be keen to find out what the rationale is. Thanks for now, Kate Gaffney, one of the business owners herself, and Clodagh Barrett is the other. Well done to both of you. Hopefully this is not lost and that it can be... I just hope, you know, people could see sense and just realise that we live in different times now. Much more different times when a lot of these planning laws were written.
Call Neil now. 0818
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, you're saying yesterday that very soon, it's a start in Dublin, be rolled out across the country, there will be cameras on all of the traffic lights. It'll be easier to catch idiots that break red lights or run red lights or, you know, park stupidly and stop in the middle of a yellow box or whatever. Will the traffic light cameras penalise cyclists and pedestrians breaking these same red lights of yours, or is it just another vindictive action against motorists, says Paddy? Probably not, I suppose. Probably not. Just the motorist as usual, and you do see it. There are diligent and law-abiding cyclists, but of course, you know, their reputation is tarnished by so many of them that believe that the red lights don't apply. And the worst of them all, the Deliveroo cyclists. They're the worst in the world. I don't know how in the name of God they're not getting creamed on the roads. I think the fire brigade or the guards do a road show too, with a car that you strap into and they roll it upside down to show you the pressure of being upside down in a car. I haven't tried it, but I heard it makes an impact on people. This is picking up on me saying yesterday, why is it that people who are learning to drive don't go through a simulated crash in some kind of a simulator so they experience what it is like to crash at speed? It would slow you down. But if you went through that kind of shock, I mean, it would change your driving habits, wouldn't it? It really would. In my 10 years here, I've seen serious deterioration in the quality of roads, along with the change in drivers' attitudes. Drivers are more selfish, aggressive, far less aware of what's going on around them. But the quality of the roads, including the motorways, is so poor in Ireland compared with other European cities. And can I just say, that's a very valid point. Can I just say, when we're talking about potholes or craters or damaged road surfaces and how it can damage your wheel or your rim or your suspension or your back, there was an article that I was reading, and what's really important with regards to the driving and the conditions of our road surfaces is the quality of your tyres. You know, I know that the dearer the tyre, the better the tyre. I get that. Not everybody can afford that. But it was kind of a technical kind of an article that was talking about the walls of the tyre, the pressures on the walls of the tyre, how the tyre splits because of the pothole. So it's actually the quality of the tyres as well. And Neil, this is a good lesson for any driver. If you see a driver using his indicator, all it proves is that his indicator's light is actually working. Exclamation mark, says Anna. I am a city centre bus driver. I see it every day. The minute I stop at lights, and if I look left, because he's up higher, or she's up higher, I'm not quite sure. If I look left or I look right, every driver puts the left hand down, picks up their mobile phone, and catches up on their social media. Time after time. At the green light, I take off. They realise I've moved, and then they try to speed to get up to pass me out. Yesterday, I was stuck behind a car, and I got a very strong smell of weed. I realised the car in front of me was enjoying a toke or a smoke, and the smell was coming back and in my open window. And he was a young lad, smoking cannabis in the driver's seat. Driving is hard enough in the city, but when you're constantly on the lookout for every other driver, as well as my own driving, it is a tough job. And just a few more, back to calls in a minute. The young drivers nowadays are not seeing the ads on telly like we did about the horrible drink driving accident adverts that used to be on in the 90s and the noughties. They really can hit home. They're all on their phones and tablets now. They are not seeing the advertising, says John. That's a very good point. Those that need it most are probably missing it. Some people are just horrible on the road. People have no patience or respect for each other. There are no guards doing checkpoints on the roads. I've been travelling from one side of the city to the other for the past 12 years and have only been stopped once. People have no fear of being stopped anymore. Well, you should have a fear of being stopped because you never know when it could actually happen, whether it's bad driving, whether it's not having road insurance or road tax. I mean, I don't include NCT in this anymore because so many people now, through no fault of their own, have expired NCT discs because of the system of the NCT. So I kind of get that. You also want to be very wary the morning after. If you have a lash of pints and you jump into the car at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, you're still technically over the limit. Bear that in mind, firstly, from the point of view of your safety and the safety of others. You might feel fine, but with regards to a breathalyzer or an alkalizer, it will tell a different story if you're stopped the morning after, I can tell you. We can only learn from the mistakes made and educate. Time and time again, we have accidents that result in fatalities. Why are we not informed afterwards of not only the outcome of what happened, but more importantly, how and why the accident happened, whether it be speed, drink, drugs, or just reckless driving? To me, that's how you educate people. Garda forensic analysis could clearly identify how an accident happened. Education is vital. The theory test and learning to drive should only be part of it. And it should be part of the secondary school education, where it can be done in a controlled environment and prior to anyone taking the wheel of a car. I gave out some stats, Andy. I think it might have been yesterday or the day before yesterday, with regards to accidents that have led to fatalities or serious injuries. And I broke it down then to the amount of people who were found to have been drinking or under the influence of drugs. So that's cause and effect. A lot of the time it is just careless driving or, you know, not doing the right thing, but sometimes it's people who are impaired from drinking drugs. A lot of people who are in crashes are involved in crashes that they're impaired from drink or drugs or both. I think for young men, it's a combination of the thrill of driving fast, the thrill of showing off in front of their mates, and inexperience. Yeah, it's all of that. It's the thrill of driving fast, showing off, inexperience, sharing their videos on TikTok and how, you know, the brave and the beautiful and how they can drive and how, you know, experienced a driver they are when they're actually not experienced at all. It's speed and zero patience. I drive from Carrigaline to the city each morning and generally see and witness every morning at least two or three different crazy driver incidents. They break red lights. They try to get into a small gap at high speed. They're also driving too close to others. It's all ages doing this before you start blaming the young. So thank you for those. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. You have lots of reasons to pick up the phone today, ladies and gentlemen. Van Morrison, ladies and gentlemen, even though it's a Van Morrison song, it's for Damien Dempsey tickets. If you're coming late to the show, don't ask. Just go with me on this. So Joe Moynihan from Ticknock in Cove, from Ardevon in Ticknock in Cove, two tickets for Damien Dempsey playing Live at the Marquee this summertime. Don't worry, I'll have lots more tickets for Live at the Marquee, not only here on air, but if you're not following me on Instagram, may I suggest that you should follow me on Instagram. I give away a lot of concert tickets and things like that on my Instagram page as well. So go for it. The reason I'm not giving away the Van Morrison tickets is I want to give them away instead to Jerry. Wonderful guy, inspirational man, double amputee, 100% blind, but yet he's glass half full, an inspiration to all of us. And he's a big music fan, more so now than ever, loves collecting vinyl and what have you. He's my kind of guy. I love vinyl too, always have. What a beautiful thing to do, Neil. Well done. It makes all our own problems go away, or else seem like no problems at all. Gordon McKnight. How are you, Gordon? An old pal of mine. Bawling for that guy. What a positive man. I love him. Nice one, Gordon. You're a good guy yourself. I had this problem with getting my uncle in Banaskellig's a wheelchair pass. I filled out the form online twice and got nothing, so I rang them and they sent it out. I had it 2 days later. If this gentleman, Jerry, has the time to ring them, he will expedite it. Give it a try. He's 8 months now, Jerry, in spite of being a double amputee and without any sight because of cataracts and glaucoma. But yet, he just powers on. What an amazing man. My God, we were out. We give out about small things and look at all he has to deal with. Fantastic. Brilliant, Mr. P. Brilliant. He is a great guy. He is brilliant. This guy, Jerry, is just incredible. So positive in spite of everything he's facing. You could teach the rest of us a thing or two, that's for sure. And two or three more. God almighty, that Jerry is the biggest legend I've heard on your radio show. That man deserves the world and more. That was a lovely gesture, Neil. No wonder people are angry with the government. He's a real example of not looking after our own people who need help. Such a lovely, positive man. Well done, Neil. I'm Delira. He's getting to go and see Van Morrison. He's an inspiration of a man, says Mary. Thank you for all of those. You're wonderful people. Another inspirational man whose first anniversary is today is the late John Murphy. Today is the first anniversary date of John Murphy's accident at Stryker in Carrigtwohill. His sister Helena got in touch with me this morning and she asked me, would you mind just thanking the people of Cork, please, for all their support at the time of John's accident and when he passed away. She says, I hope that people keep us in their prayers and thoughts today. We're still struggling and we miss John entirely. And that's from Helena and all of his family. And John Murphy, she's very, very upset on the phone. She was chatting with Claire this morning. John Murphy, 41-year-old father of three from Watergrass Hill, died in June of last year, nearly 2 months after the explosion at Stryker's Angrove facility in Carrigtwohill on the 18th of April, 2023. So 1 year ago today. And our thoughts are with all of the family. Text 0868 104 106. Busy morning this morning. I'm jumping in a lot of different topics that we've been dealing with, but let's get back to the phone lines. That's what we're here for. Jane, good morning.
Good morning.
How are we doing? About 7 minutes left. Just your own story, your own story to share, please, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So I'm a 38-year-old mother of one from Frankfield, and about 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with an incredibly rare cancer called clear cell sarcoma. And basically, it just doesn't respond to normal therapies like chemotherapy and radiotherapy, so I had to have my right hand amputated.
By the time you were 21?
No, in December 2021.
You're in your 30s, is what you said, right?
Yeah, I'm 38, yeah.
So how does one prepare for that?
I didn't really have much time. So I was told on Friday the 10th of December, it was the day after my daughter's birthday, and it happened 4 days later. So you just, you don't really have a choice, I suppose, so you just go with it, really.
Nobody would want that, clearly, but maybe that's a better way, is it?
It's the only way. There is no other treatment. So
what I mean is that it would happen quickly, or is it better have time to...
There's pros and cons. Yeah. There's pros and cons, I suppose. If you have time to wrap your head around it, that might help. But I suppose I had anticipated this coming just from a little bit of research that I had done into what I had. So I wasn't overly shocked. Some people were, I guess, but I had kind of prepared myself that this might have been one of the eventualities.
And tell me, okay. And you've adapted with that, okay. But where are you with regards to your cancer diagnosis?
Unfortunately, my cancer returned in October, just gone. So, it's now stage 4. So, we don't know is the long and the short of it. We just kind of have to take each day as it comes and just see what happens, really.
Have you family?
Yeah, I have a daughter, she's 3, and husband, yeah, and obviously parents and 2 brothers, and good, great, great friends as well.
So she's laughing with stage 4 cancer. It's the most devastating news to get.
Yeah.
It's a cancer responding to chemo.
Yeah, we thought we'd get a bit longer than we got, but before it came back, but that's just the luck of the draw, really, isn't it?
Well, it's very, 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 very sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, are you cherishing the time, or do you think that there will be some kind of treatment that may prolong?
Well, they have me on a tablet at the moment that has actually managed to stop things in its tracks. So, because it's incredibly rare, it's like 1 in 6.5 million people get this. There's not many of us out there, so there's not much track record for it. So they have me on a tablet that was used for, I think, kidney cancers, and it seems to have kind of curtailed things for the moment. So we're just going to see how things go.
Okay, we're taking it 1 day at a time. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But
the good things.
I think that you do appreciate the good things. You cherish everything, you know. We all should, for whatever length of time we have. And I don't mean to come across as condescending. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes we fixate on the most stupid things, and then
but that's human nature, isn't it?
Ah, listen. Oh my God! You know, listen. Tell me about it, particularly. I won't even go into anybody else's circumstances apart from your own. I don't have a lot of time. And I don't mean to, you know, move along from your cancer diagnosis.
Yeah. No,
I wish you well on that. But you want your independence. You want to be able to drive. You want to be able to get out. You want to be able to park. You've been refused a badge.
Yeah, basically. So there's a disabled driver's tax allowance, I guess. So it gives you a VRT exemption on your purchase of your car. So obviously, like most people in Ireland, I drove a manual car in December 2021, but obviously when I had my hand removed, I couldn't drive that car anymore. I had to get an automatic. And adapters.
Yeah, yeah.
But because there's six criteria for this primary medical certificate to let you qualify for this exemption. For the VRT exemption, yeah. But unfortunately, under the six criteria, you have to have both of your hands gone, not just one. So there's a lot of people who have become single-arm amputees for one reason or another, and they don't meet the criteria for this this VRT exemption, unfortunately. So it's definitely an anomaly, something, an oversight, I feel, but it's been there, unfortunately, in existence since 1968.
Since 1968. And is there any group or organisation fighting this, what you call an anomaly? I call it... I call it a very unfair treatment of people who have to adapt to a life without one arm. I mean, do you qualify with one leg or do you have to have two legs gone? Do you know what I mean?
No, one leg qualifies, all right. Yeah.
So one leg qualifies, but one arm doesn't.
Yeah, and so it's I'm not really sure.
That's bizarre.
How the criteria were... came upon day one. It doesn't seem to
that
make any sense.
Bizarre.
You know?
And how come people haven't been fighting or protesting or changing that law, that draconian law, since 1968? I mean, can you not even... So does that mean you're precluded from disability parking with a badge?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't. I don't qualify for a blue badge. Yeah, no. I don't qualify for anything. To be honest, like... All I wanted to do was, I'm a secondary school teacher, was to get back to work. And when this happened initially, obviously I'm not working now, but get back to work and get back to my life. But it just seemed like every junction we came to, there was a roadblock and something saying no. Like, I never thought about after the operation. I just thought about, let's get this done and get back to normal. And then we were hit with...
Yeah, does your man know that, like Roderick O'Gorman? The Minister for Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth. Does he know this?
This has been flagged, unfortunately, by many people before me. But, there just seems to be nothing coming from it, really, which is quite disappointing.
Well, it is disappointing. It is, certainly. But it's even more than that, because you have to deal with the cancer and the treatment that you're going through, and you have a young family, and you have done everything that's been asked of you to fight the fight. Part of that involved losing your arm. You would think that they would see that as being, even your case alone, that somebody would flag your case and say, hang on a second, this needs to change. This is wrong. This is unfair.
Yeah, a group of us actually went up to the Shannon recently and we spoke in front of a disability board, and they agreed with everything we were saying, and they just said, look, unfortunately, I'd like to say this, we haven't heard this before, but we have, and that's basically as far as we got. They were very sympathetic and everything, but it seems to be that unless it happens to someone...
Come back to us when you don't have... Come back to us when you don't have the other arm, kind of.
Yeah, basically, in effect, yeah. Yeah.
That is bizarre. That is just bizarre.
It's just, I suppose, people don't really think about it until it happens to them. I was living my normal life, doing everything the same as everyone else. I just had a baby, everything was going great, and then boom, you know, your life changes. And it's not until it happens to you. I would never have heard of this until it happened to me.
But you are dealing with what you're dealing with rather than having this compounded upon you as well. You know, that this is not, you know, you are not seen as somebody with a disability. I mean, we have two hands for a reason. Do you know what I'm saying, Jane?
Yeah. Oh, we do. Trust me.
Except you don't have you don't have a right hand.
Yeah, it was my dominant right hand. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a big change for all of us, my family, everyone. But, you know, you adapt, you get used to it. But, I mean, everything takes a lot longer. You know, like what I said in the Shannon was if people just even tried to do it for an hour themselves just to see what it's like, you know, it would open a lot of eyes. But
I mean, this is going nowhere near yours. But I broke my left arm, you know, the humerus, right smack in half. Just
yeah.
So I was out of action for 2 or 3 months. I tell you something, it was very frustrating having to live with one arm, you know, like it's very hard to adapt to it. Like, and I'm only in the halfpenny place by comparison, but I kind of slightly understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, well, that's it. Like you got an insight into it. And I think that's important because people don't understand, you know, it's difficult.
Listen, I'm out of time this morning. I don't mean to cut you short. We're going to get on to Roderick O'Gorman's office here now at midday today and just ask a very straight, simple question that needs just a straight, simple answer. We'll see what they say on the matter, all right?
Yeah, I'd be intrigued to hear.
Okay, stay listening. We may chat again, all right? Take care of yourself for now.
Okay, take care.
Thank you, Jane. Bye. Thank you to everybody who got in touch this morning. It's a very interesting morning, really and truly. Get involved in the conversation yourself. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Text 0868104106. If you have a story to share, email neil@redfm.ie. Our phone lines stay open after midday on 0818104106. And I will see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.